भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, second chapter, Daksha curses Lord Shiva, now Lord text 29. First Daksha curses Lord Shiva, then Nandishwara curses the followers of Daksha, then now third round, Bhriga Muni, on behalf of the ritualistic brahmanas, now cursing Lord Shiva's followers. That's text 29, it's Bhriga Muni.
Nashta Shaucha Muda Dhyo Jatta Basmasti Dharina Vishantu Shiva Dikshayam Yatra Daivam Surasavam Nasta Saucha Muda Dhiyo Jatabashmasti Dharinaha Vishantu Shiva Dikshayam Yatra Dhaivam Surasavam Nashta Shaucha Muda Dhyo Jita Vasma Asti Dharinaha Vishantu Shiva Dikshayam Yatra Daivam Surasavam Nasta Saucha Muta Dhyo Jata Basma Asti Dharinna Jantu Shiva Dikshayam Yatra Daivam Surasavam
Ladies, go ahead.
Nasta Saucha Muda Dhyo Jitta Basma Asti Dharina Jishantu Shiva Dikshayam Yantra Daivam Surasavam Nasta Saucha Muda Dhyo Jitta Basma Asti Dharina Vishantu Shiva Dikshayam Yatra Daivam Surasavam Nasta Shaucha.
Cleanliness being abandoned.
Muda Dhyaha.
Foolish.
Jata Bashma. Asti Dharina.
Wearing long hair, ashes and bones.
Vishantu may enter Shiva Dikshayam
into initiation of worship of Shiva.
Yatra,
where
Daivam
are spiritual.
Sura Asavam,
wine and liquor. Translation: those who vow to worship Lord Shiva are so foolish that they imitate him by keeping long hair on their heads. When initiated into worship of Lord Shiva, they prefer to live on wine, flesh, and other such things. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Indulging in wine and meat, keeping long hair on one's head, not bathing daily, and smoking ganja, marijuana, are some of the habits which are accepted by foolish creatures who do not have regulated lives. By such behavior, one becomes devoid of transcendental knowledge. In the initiation into the Shiva mantra, there are mudrikashtaka, in which it is sometimes recommended that one makes his sitting place on the vagina, and thus desire nirvana, or dissolution of existence. In that process of worship, wine is needed, or sometimes, in place of wine, palm tree juice, which is converted into an intoxicant. This is also offered according to Shiva Agama, a scripture on the method of worshipping Lord Shiva. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Kicharani Yavishesha Shunyavari Pushchachade Sitarani Om Gyanam Timaranda Shagalandrana Shulakaya Chakshurum Viritam Chingam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpatribhyascha kripa sindhubhyeva cha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Nastasaucha muddadiyo chattavasmasti dharina yashantu shivadikshayam yatra daivam surasavam. Those who vow to worship Lord Shiva are so foolish that they imitate him by keeping long hairs on their heads. When initiated into worship of Lord Shiva, they prefer to live on wine, flesh, and other such things. So, this description of their behavior, Prabhupada amplifies a little bit. He mentions the Shiva Agama. It's actually, he probably calls it a scripture. As far as I know, it's a collection of scriptures. The Agamas are different. There's 28 Shiva Agamas that describe the worship of Shiva. So what's being described here in the previous purport, he says, Vrigamunis accursed and Bhashandi, they have become, Prabhupada translates it as atheist, means not a follower of the Vedas, a heretic. But they picked up Mayavad philosophy. And then Prabhupada says, besides that, among the worshippers of Lord Shiva, there is a section who live a devilish life. So there are among the Shaivites, also the Shaktas. Also, these things have leaked into the Vaishnava tradition also. This generally called by the name of tantrics. Tantric practices historically, they seem to have sprung up among the Buddhists. The tantric Buddhists, their headquarters used to be in Bengal and Orissa. Vajrayana Buddhism, now known as Tibetan Buddhism. But in that, there's at least one group of people that is tantric. Means, in general, certain the practices really focuses on the body. And it involves the different things like Hatha Yoga. Yoga asanas according to the Hatha Yoga system. Hatha Yoga is
not the traditional Vedic yoga system, which is called Ashtanga Yoga by Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Hatha Yoga is a Shaivite version, adaptation of that. And then also this big part of it is this Kundalini Yoga, with the emphasis on these various chakras as energy centers, and then with the notion that there's a kind of a potency, the Kundalini, which is coiled around the base of the spine. The spine is called Merudanda, and by these practices this serpent power is raised up, pierces through the various chakras until it finally comes up here at the top of the head. This is associated with tantric. And he also mentions here some of the things that are done as part of this, especially among the Shaivites. He mentions this is some of the practices involving the ritual use of intoxicants, meat eating, and sexual intercourse. Often it's called the left-handed tantra. Prabhupada describes it, makes his sitting place on the vagina and thus desires nirvana or dissolution of existence as a kind of ritual sexual intercourse in which the male, instead of discharging semen, is supposed to rather have it go up. I guess until it rises up to the top of the head through sexual intercourse. And that's what he says, makes a sitting place on the vagina and thus desires nirvana or dissolution of existence. You can see using this term, it's adapted from Buddhism. In that process of worship, wine is needed. There's a ritual use of intoxicant wine, or as he says here, fermented. You get from certain palm trees. They cut them, and the sap comes out, and it becomes a date gourd. Only date palms. You see them all around Mayapur. They have these little buckets hanging onto the palm trees, and they slice them and bleed out the sap. And you let that, it's quite sweet, and you let it hang out for a while and ferments. That's like a local village intoxicant. We call it palm, all over Southeast Asia, palm potty. So he probably says they use this, they drink this also. I don't know too much about this. Sometime I read some description of the Shaivites. Prabhupada says they're devilish. They also live in crematoria, burial grounds. They also make use of corpses, sitting on them, having sexual intercourse with corpses. I mean, it's really necrophilia. I mean, all kinds of very deep in the modes of ignorance, these kinds of things. Again, they don't bathe, these kinds of Shaivites. They don't bathe, don't cut their hair. They also eat the flesh of corpses, human flesh. But I've read descriptions of this stuff, but I don't care to read again. But it's ghoulish. It's quite ghoulish. It says devilish. There was it reminded me of there was a very nice art exhibit called I was touring the United States with Shaivite art, and so there was this one of the paintings, these little small paintings they do, like conga paintings, and showed Shiva, Parvati, Ganesh and Kartikeya, like a little family scene, you know, domestic scene. They're sitting around on a mountaintop and all together, and they're stringing garlands of skulls. It really reminded me, well, there's some television program, The Addams Family or something, where all this whole family of ghouls, you know, and the joke was here, they're totally ghoulish, but they engage in these sort of common domestic activity. This sort of reminded me that there's this sort of a sweet little family scene. I mean, baby Ganesh is picking up the skulls and handing them to Parvati, who's dreaming about it. There's a whole pile of skulls there. Instead of flowers, there's skulls. So anyway, this is these are the things that go on. The Vaishnavas, the Sahajiyas are the same kinds of people. Sometimes the Sahajiya means that these kinds of tantric practices are also taken over Vaishnava theology. So again, among those people, there's also practice of sexual intercourse and things like that, as an attempt to imitate Radha and Krishna, just like the Shaivites, Shiva and Shakti, or Shiva and Parvati. And there's always this kind of impersonal influence, because the notion is I become Krishna, unite Radha and Krishna together, and so on. And also with the notion that ultimately you look for nirvana, total dissolution of existence by this practice. So this is what's going on. Any questions about this stuff?
Yeah. So the distinction between Hatha Yoga and Ashtanga, Hatha Yoga, you don't follow the same eightfold process?
No, it's different. I don't know much about it, but sometimes very in a casual way, Hatha Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, people use the same words as though they're interchangeable. But technically speaking, Ashtanga Yoga is Patanjali's yoga system, and this Hatha Yoga system is a later one by an adaptation by Shaivites. And the characteristic of this of the yoga, this yoga system, is really focused. It's even more so than the Patanjali, it's focused on the body. And when you get down to the tantrics, it's self-divinization. But even, you know, that God is in my own body, and I am that God who's in my own body. It becomes a kind of self-divinization, even on the bodily platform. So the yoga system has always been for those people who are very interested in the body, and that gets carried further and further to an extreme by these people who are in the mode of ignorance. I'll go on to the next verse. I don't have so much to say about these smoking marijuana. That also goes on in Vrindavan. I've seen these, I don't know if they were Shaivites, right on the Purnima path. These guys were naked. They had chains all over their body. They weighted their body down with chains. There in some hut, right behind them was these very tall marijuana plants they were cultivating. That's also going on. Mm-hmm.
You say Shiva's a great personality, therefore should be imitated, but it seems like some of these practices, like keeping long hair or not bathing or dressing very meagerly, are just aspects of his renunciation. And so why is it then improper for people to follow that
Because generally one should the aspect of, for example, Haridas Thakur is that he would sit with the Tulsi and chant. That's 64 rounds a day, the three times 64 rounds a day. Huh?
192.
Yeah. That's 3 lakhs of names, they call it. 300,000 names. 192. So, and didn't do anything else. Because that takes pretty much 21, 22 hours to accomplish that. So you set off to do that. Well, it's a great example of being absorbed in the holy name. And don't do anything else. You will probably fall down. That's why it says that this behavior of great people, so the renunciation of Lord Shiva is exemplary for the Yule, and so the principle that one should be renounced, that you have to follow. That's called following in the footsteps. Imitation means you exactly try to do what they do on their level. You won't be able to do it. So you know somebody that's a very advanced devotee, they sleep only 2 hours a day, so you start doing it. You wreck the car. Or somebody who doesn't eat very little, like the Six Goswamis, look at their renunciation. Lived on a pat of butter every so often, didn't eat, stayed up all night. You try to do that, you'll just quit. You'll fall down. So these things by Lord Shiva, and then they do. Sometimes great people do extraordinary things that are simply not to be imitated. Anyway, that's why the difference is there. So, but the reason. When somebody imitates, it means that they have especially here in this case with Lord Shiva, they think already that they chant this mantra sometimes, Shiva Oham, I am Shiva. So therefore they think they can do whatever he does. So that is due to impersonalist ideas. They imitate, especially the smoking ganja thing is very big. He does that, so they do it. But Prabhupada says he drank an ocean of poison. You do that too. Lord Shiva drank the poison came out of the milk ocean. Lord Shiva drank it, turned his throat blue. He can do that. So, then go ahead. If you can drink, if you're on that level, then you can also smoke the ganja. Anything else? Let us go on. Text 30. Brahmacha Brahmanams Chaiva Yad Yuyam Parinindata Setum Vidaranam Pumsam Ata Parshandam Asrita. Brihu Muni continued, since you blaspheme the Vedas and the Brahmanas, who are followers of the Vedic principles, it is understood that you have already taken shelter of the doctrine of atheism. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Brihu Muni, in cursing Nandishwara, said that not only would they be degraded as atheists because of this curse, but they had already fallen to the standard of atheism because they had blasphemed the Vedas, which are the source of human civilization. Human civilization is based on the qualitative divisions of social order, namely the intelligent class, the martial class, the productive class, and the laborer class. The Vedas provide the right direction for advancing in spiritual cultivation and economic development and regulating the principle of sense gratification, so that ultimately one may be liberated from material contamination to his real state of spiritual identification, aham brahmasmi. As long as one is in the contamination of material existence, one changes bodies from the aquatics up to the position of Brahma, but the human form of life is the highest perfectional stage in the material world. The Vedas give directions by which to elevate oneself in the next life. The Vedas are the mother for such instructions, and the Brahmanas, or the persons who are in knowledge of the Vedas, are the father. Thus, if one blasphemes the Vedas and Brahmanas, naturally one goes down to the status of atheism. The exact word used in Sanskrit is nastika, which refers to one who does not believe in the Vedas, but manufactures some concocted system of religion. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the followers of the Buddhist system of religion are nastikas. In order to establish the doctrine of nonviolence, Lord Buddha flatly refused to believe in the Vedas, and thus later on Shankaracharya stopped the system of religion in India. Here it is stated, Brahma cha Brahmanam. Brahma means the Vedas, aham brahmasmi means I am in full knowledge. The Vedic assertion is that one should think that he is Brahman, for actually he is Brahman. If Brahma or the Vedic spiritual science is condemned, and the masters of the spiritual science, the Brahmanas, are condemned, then where does human civilization stand? Bhrigu Muni said, it is not due to my cursing that you shall become atheists. You are already situated in the principle of atheism, therefore you are condemned. In other words, you shall become atheist means that that's a natural consequence of your rejecting, condemning the Vedas and the Brahmanas. One who does not accept the authority of the Vedas, Prabhupada says, is nastika. Na-astika. The word asti means it is. You may remember in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the characteristics of the Brahmanas is jnana vijnana astikyam. Remember that? Astikyam. Astikyam means they affirm. Asti, it is. They affirm or the authority of the Vedas. Whereas na asti, nastik, nastika, the one who does not accept the authority of the Vedas. No. Nastika. Therefore, when they say their sad-darshan, six philosophies, and they're called orthodox. People translate this astikyam. They're orthodox because even though they disagree among themselves, they all accept or affirm the authority of the Vedas. Now, the difficulty is that somebody who is attached to the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas may not appreciate the Jnana Kanda, or the transcendental teachings of the Vedas. And similarly, on the other side, those who are followers of the Jnana Kanda or Upasana Kanda, view of liberation or the or transcendental aspect of it, they may reject prakarma condescension. When Lord Chaitanya had his discussion with Ramananda Roy, he said, asked him to tell him what is the highest goal. And he started by saying, by following Varnashram Dharma. One should follow Varnashram Dharma and perform all one's work for the sake of Krishna. Quoted a verse to that effect. And Lord Chaitanya said, that is superficial. You can go further. So Varnashram Dharma is superficial because it deals with the body, bodily relationships. Nevertheless, it's not rejected. When Prabhupada started talking about instituting Varnashram Dharma, the devotees said to him, well, I thought we were transcendental to that. Prabhupada said, are you? So it may be based on the body, maybe for those who are still identified with the body, but how many people are already on the liberated platform? Krishna says to Arjuna, the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature, rise above them. But that doesn't mean that you reject the Vedas. Because how many people are above them? So the Vedas have to be accepted. And Prabhupada says that what the Vedas, the most important thing is that is this Varnashram Dharma. That has to be there. So the Vedas should not be rejected. So when you become a partisan, so much so that those people who are following some other part of the Vedas, you completely reject them altogether, then you become reject the Vedas, you become Gnostica. So the Gnostica means Buddhism. There was a time you had a kind of a Protestant movement. I don't know. People date Buddha and all this stuff around 500 BC, but really no one knows how to. It's just a guess. Maybe much older than that. But there were two offshoots of a kind of anti-Brahminical, anti-Vedic Protestantism, if you can call it that. One is Buddhism. Buddha was a Kshatriya. This is like among the Kshatriyas. And the other is the Jains, who are still around also. It's a little harder to propagate because of the strict Jains, they walk ahead of Russian phones so that you know insects killed. And they have this little cloth they wear in front of their mouth so they won't breathe in an insect. They're so non-violent that their monks wear no clothes at all. So this limits the amount of propagation you can do. And they wear no clothes and they shave off all the hairs on their bodies. I have no idea. It's clean, I would suppose. But This is the Jain, some of the Jain practices. They came out of the Kshatriya group. The Jains are big businessmen to this day. They're kind of wealthy. But they didn't prop, because you can't drive in a car if you're strict, or a jet airplane. I mean, how many animals are killed, insects and stuff like that when you drive? You see the front end of a car after you drive at night, you're plastered with bugs. Anyway, they're around now, I suppose, but they, it seems to have been about the same time as Buddhism. So in both cases the Vedas are rejected by them. So they're Gnostica. They don't accept the Vedas. Prabhupada explains, at least in reference to Buddhism, it was because of that the reason was that there was so much animal killing going on in the name of Vedic sacrifice, and therefore Buddha wanted to preach ahimsa. But ahimsa, non-violence, while it's a principle, it's not applied across the board in an absolute way, because there is animal sacrifice in the Vedas, and also, of course, Kshatriyas are violent to begin with. But anyway, he wanted to stop the animal slaughter, and since it was being justified in the name of the Vedas. The Vedas has animal sacrifice in order to restrict it. Like sometimes, if people are going to do things anyway. You see this day, if the government entirely bans something, like in the United States and in the 20s, in an excess of piety, an amendment to the Constitution was passed. Making alcohol illegal. It was called prohibition, prohibited alcohol. And because everybody was pious, and also they're afraid of the Irish. The theory was it was the low classes that drank to excess, and since and the senators who passed it, well, you know, I never drink to excess, so we'll just go on. Anyway, and there were temperance movements that were quite powerful in the United States. The Women's Christian Temperance Union and all these people, and they were going into saloons and these ladies and busting up. Anyway, it passed this prohibition. But even the people that passed it were making arrangements already to make sure they can get some alcohol somehow or other. They had their civilized amount of alcohol. It was okay. They weren't abusing it. So nobody actually followed it. Very few people actually followed it. And what happened is that it was bootlegged. It was brought in. If you're in the north, it came over the Canadian border so many different ways, because they were still Seagram's is a Canadian company, and so it got rich. It was being smuggled, or people had learned how to make their own. Of course, you can make alcohol. Bathtub gin and so on, and out in the hills of Kentucky they were distilling, they called moonshine. People have these mason jars, these big jars, you know, that you get pickles in and stuff like that, you know, full of this moonshine. I used to see it when I was a kid, you know, these mason jars with alcohol in them. There's people, even after prohibition was repealed, that people had, whether they had a taste for the stuff. And also you had to pay the government tax on it, so it was still going on in the South. You see these guys sitting around drinking out of these big mayonnaise jars and whatever of alcohol. So people weren't following. So then the government decides, well, we can't. And you know, the crime, just like it is now with heroin or with marijuana and so on, it's officially illegal, but it's widely tolerated. So one thing that sometimes it's done is that you allow it, but with a license. So now you can drink alcohol, but to buy it you have to be 21, I think 21. And there are different regulations. In this state you only can buy it in certain stores. Like that. And it's thought that, well, people are going to do it anyway, so this way we can control it. Same with cigarettes. They haven't got around to banning them completely, because they know it will just create a huge cigarette business. There's already a smuggling cigarette business because of the tax on the thing. If you ban it completely, it'll just create criminals everywhere. And so cigarettes are still legal, but they restrict where you can smoke them, have to be a certain age before you can buy them, and so on. And put a heavy tax on them to discourage people. The other thing is, of course, the government ends up making so much money on these things that they're reluctant to ban it also. But this is the idea in the Vedas anyway, that things that people are going to do anyway, you license it, you permit it with restrictions. So the Vedas allow this restricted meat eating. You had to perform a sacrifice and so on. But then Brahmanas, they sometimes are like lawyers. They can look at the scripture and they can say, well, here's how you can do what you want to do, so you'll technically not be in violation. We can follow the letter of the law and completely evade the spirit of it, what it's in trying to do. So that's what happened. So on the name of the Vedas, people were performing sacrifices. Well, really, it was just meat eating. Even today, in Calcutta, where they have Hindu butchers, they have these shops, and you know, they have goat chunks of goat meat hanging all over the place. And you almost always see prominently displayed a picture of Kali, because it's all been offered. It's all Kali prasad. It's all been offered. The Kali, they've been killed in sacrifice and so on, they say. So, but the slaughterhouse, maybe this is the end, there's somebody doing something, things like that. So that's why the Vedas were rejected by Buddha, because it allowed for this animal slaughter to take place under the name of Vedic sacrifice. Anyway, the Vedas should not be rejected here. Prabhupada all the time, he endorses the Vedas, even the part of the Vedas that don't deal with transcendence, but just deal with the operations of material society, because it's very important. And material society should be organized in such a way that it fosters or leads people gradually toward transcendence. When Prabhupada was in Australia, he said that people can go on eating meat, but you should give us all the cows. Then when they die, you can come and take them and eat them. Just don't kill them. Or he said, if you want to eat meat, you should sacrifice. It's like in the Old Testament, there's animal sacrifice. You should follow. You should do animal sacrifice, like Abel did. And you should do it in your church. And this way you should sacrifice. He said, then gradually, when you find out your churches are running with blood, you'll think, what are we doing? Why should we do this? That was Prabhupada's recommendation. So that you even if you had a Vaishnava country, you wouldn't have slaughterhouses, and you wouldn't allow cows to be killed, but if people in their own wanted to kill goats or whatever they were eating, offer them a sacrifice, fine. You should kill it yourself. You should not think that it grows on trees and comes wrapped in cellophane. You should see what you're doing. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. What's good about making adjustments due to time, place, and circumstance? Is there any situation where certain things in Vedic culture are not conducive at a particular time for spiritual advancement and then therefore could be rejected? Because somebody could argue that Buddha was seeing how the Vedas were being misused and the Brahmins were oppressing people, and so therefore
well, not to reject the Vedas, but certain practices. Lord Chaitanya mentions that some things are not allowed, like horse sacrifice is not allowed, Kali Yuga cow sacrifice is not allowed in Kali Yuga. The practice of brother begetting a child when a man is can't have a child, or at least he can't have a son, and his brother can substitute with his wife, that's forbidden. Also sannyas. These things are forbidden in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada said it means Mayavad sannyas, or Vaishnava sannyas is allowed. But these, so some things, according to time, place, some things are not practiced, but it doesn't mean you reject the whole authority of the Vedas. That's a different thing. So there are different things for different times. And you need somebody who's an expert to say, this is what's prescribed now. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the expert that we're following. He said, now this is what is prescribed now. This is the medicine for you at this time. You should take it. Well, there are lots of medicines on the shelf. What are you going to say? Well, this is medicine too, that's medicine too, that's medicine too. Oh, we should reject all the medicine? No. We have to follow the acharyas. Know what to do. Yeah, when you're on the same level as Prabhupada, you can do it. Sure, go ahead. Are you there yet? Okay. Don't worry about it. I mean, already we had one big acharya start to change things. Kirtananda decided with Prabhupada, you know, we're going to do it like this. I mean, do we need a new acharya right afterwards? And as it turned out, although he was claiming to be on that level, the claim was not right. When you're on that, somebody's on that level, you can do. Yeah. Anyway, it won't be one person because it would have to be the GBC body. And the GBC body itself would have to be pretty advanced to make some There are fine adjustments you can make, very small adjustments, but on some of the basic things. Also, maybe you have to have some debate about what's fine and what's... But, for example, our practice is to distribute books with the purpose of making devotees. So when Prabhupada was here, we did it one way. If that turns out to be not productive anymore, then we should find another way. But the same principle should be there. Not that it has to be done exactly the same way. So sometimes there are details that don't affect matter of principles that can be changed, of course.
When I was studying on the
That's also in the Ashtanga yoga system, that generally yogis will live a very long time. And what they would do is wait for those astronomical moments when this Devayani, the path to the gods or the path to transcendence opens up, and you leave at that right time and you head out. Yeah, they wait around a couple hundred years for the right moment, and they can control when they leave their bodies. Yeah, yeah. So Prabhupada claims that you'd see these other yogis who would show up at the Kumbh Mela. That's hundreds of years old. Prabhupada ki jai.